welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic today on the show. Mark Schindler is in the building. Schindler and I are going to break down the NBA playoffs for 5 to 10 minutes at the top, just very quickly to dive into a couple of things that are happening. And then we're going to dive into the meat of this podcast, which is going to be something I'm referring to as the Wembanyama rankings. Where do we most want to see Victor Wembanyama end up in the NBA draft lottery that will occur next week on Tuesday? Mark, what's going on, man?
What's up, Sam? I am tired. I feel like we see, both of us say that every pod, but that's just, that's the life. No, it's good. There were four media days for the WNBA yesterday. I was only able to make it to two of them. And you only got roasted in one of them. Only got roasted in one of them. Was able to make it right today. So, yeah, it was very fun. Remind me to send you that video. Actually,
I need to have
the video. But yeah, that was fun
for people who don't know Kelsey Plum of the Las Vegas Aces. Mark wore an Oregon T-shirt to the media day, and Kelsey Plum does not play that shit. And. Yeah. Was more than happy to absolutely roast Mark.
Yeah, and I was like the only one there, so it was great. We had a good time, though. It was fun. This is a good week. Yesterday was I don't want to say weirdest day of the playoffs, but those were two very odd games for me. Not that I didn't enjoy them, but like they were, I don't know, they're just kind of different. They were still fun, but not really what I was expecting in either game to a degree. So yes.
I think the last 2 days of the playoffs are like that, to be honest, because in the day before that, we saw game five of Boston, Philadelphia, and that was just a weird, wild ride where it felt like Joe Mazzulla kind of made the wrong decision at every turn. And then also, like, I didn't really love the plan. I thought that Philadelphia, this is something I'm going to do. I'm going to do like a bigger breakdown this weekend on the playoff series as they end, but I thought that Doc Rivers has made some really smart adjustments, shortening the rotation. I really like the way that they're defending ball screens a little bit against Boston. Early on, they were just playing like a straight drop. Now they're playing like a drop, and then they're kind of being more aggressive in peel switching, it feels like, and being willing to just kind of live with Embiid getting those mismatches occasionally if he gets strung out in those circumstances, or you know, somebody else getting mismatched onto a guard. I'm intrigued by that a little bit. I'm also just intrigued by the fact that Boston feels like they have no idea how to really attack them in ball screens after game two and three. And that's, I think, what I'm most looking forward to seeing tonight. There's obviously been a big adjustment. They're going to start Robert Williams in game six next to Al Horford, and they're going to go bigger. And my guess is the way that they're going to do this is they're going to play Al Horford on Joel Embiid and then Robert Williams on PJ Tucker and let him kind of roam around and try and be a menace and help. The problem there is I haven't really loved Robert Williams in drop that much in this series. I've really liked him as a roaming defender, but it feels like since Jalen McDaniels has been taken out of the rotation, Robert Williams hasn't been as effective. So I'm really intrigued to see just how this whole thing goes with Boston tonight, making a real adjustment to go bigger, which is something they haven't done a ton of in this series. Most of the time they've been going smaller.
Yeah, I'm interested as well, because kind of like you stated, like part of, I think, just what's been an issue for Boston at large, and I mean, like they have a lot larger issues, and not even like, I think issues is almost too far to an extent, but like you just haven't felt Rob Will at all. And granted, like he came off the injury, he's been very in and out and just not the same, but that's part of the issue. Like I think even with what he did defensively last year, so much of it is, I mean, was like you're mentioning in that role. It wasn't in him being somebody who can like be incredibly awesome as a switch defender, somebody who you are comfortable dropping. And I think you've seen some of those issues play out a little bit in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's what I'm most looking forward to tonight. The other game is Denver and Phoenix. Look, Denver is now going to be playing a Phoenix team without DeAndre Ayton, who has a rib contusion, and Chris Paul, who has that groin strain. Look, DeAndre Ayton hasn't been great in this series. We can acknowledge that. But, like, the drop-off going from DeAndre Ayton to now having to play, like, 35 minutes of Jock Landale and then another 13 of Bismack is large, I think. And we'll have to see how they can respond. It's going to require another Herculean effort from Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Ultimately, that's what this series comes down to. Can they do that?
Yeah, I think almost to me too, this comes down to more of with what they've gotten from the bench from in pieces and parts throughout the series, can they cobble that together to be even more now? I think TJ Warren has had really good moments throughout the series, and I think it's at the point where, like, just play him 25 minutes because you kind of need it. I mean,
you have to outscore them now. Like, you kind of have to run and gun them. And that's not a great idea against Denver. It's actually a really bad idea, but I think you kind of just have to do it with what your roster looks like.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, the issue is just like, what else are they going to do? Like you said, like with Biz, I just, you need an outlier performance. We're going to be neutral on offense. So I think you're just asking for a lot. So it's, I'm interested to see what happens regardless, but it's going to be an interesting game. It just sucks that injuries are playing such a big part in the series.
Yeah, and speaking of injuries, the Lakers-Warriors game last night was marred by the fourth quarter Anthony Davis injury. We need to stop acting like Kevon Looney did anything dirty on this play, please, for the love of God. Like, what are we doing here? I just wanted to say that. Like, this is absurd that this is even a talking point. Second, I have no idea what this series looks like if Anthony Davis isn't playing. I guess, because it's going to be really hard.
Oh, I do.
To get stops.
If Anthony Davis doesn't play in the next two games, I think it's over. Like, point blank period, I would take the Warriors, even with having to win two games.
I think I would too, but we'll see. I think that, you know, it feels like there's a lot being held close to the chest right now with Anthony Davis, and we'll see whether or not he plays. Last night, it felt like the Lakers did not come out and defend at all when I watched that game. It was just like, you know, I think they give up like 70 in the first half, something like that.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, when you do that, you're probably not going to win many playoff games. And they end up giving up 125 or so, or 121 maybe over the course of the full game. They actually like figured it out a little bit late, but a lot of that was, you know, fourth quarter garbage time after Anthony Davis got hurt. So we'll see whether or not the Lakers have Anthony Davis. That just feels like the only thing worth saying about that series right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
And then the final series is Miami and New York. We've talked a lot about this series as kind of, you know, not being that interesting, because I just think Miami has like a real schematic advantage and has the two best players in the series, frankly, in Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. All due respect to Jalen Brunson, who was absolutely phenomenal last night. He and Quentin Grimes play 48 minutes. The fact that Quentin Grimes is playing all 48 minutes coming off of that injury, shout out to him. Obviously had that play last night where he got drilled on that, like, probably illegal screen by Bam Adebayo, and, you know, comes up limping and then still rips Jimmy Butler. Like, that was the coolest play I feel like I've seen in a long time.
That was.
Shout out Quentin Grimes, deserves all the pub that he can get. I mean, where do you see that series going? Do you see this getting past six and going back to New York?
I do not. I mean, like, Jimmy looked a little bit hobbled last night. I don't want to take too much from that. Like, I think he's had a huge load this series, especially like you consider game 2/3. We weren't even sure he was going to play with what the ankle looked like at the end of that one game. I can't remember if it was 2 or 3. My mind is so boggled right now. But point being, like, I think it's going to be fine. A lot of yesterday, like, mainly the Knicks, their effort and execution was a lot better. They parsed down the rotation even more. Jalen Brunson and Quentin Grimes played 48 minutes. Like, That was wild to watch. I think to me, that's the best shot that the Knicks are going to be able to throw, while also noting like the Heat shot terribly. I don't love just being like shot quality, but I do think that was a really big factor yesterday. Miami started getting stuff going towards the end, especially with Duncan Robinson coming in. I'm pretty confident that the Heat are going to wrap this up, but I would like to be wrong, because I have really enjoyed the Knicks this year, and I don't really want to see them bow out in an ugly way. So we will see.
Okay. 10 minutes. We did it. We actually stuck to a time, and we figured it out. Good for us, Mark. Okay. Let's jump into the Wembanyama rankings now. as we're referring to them. So the process here is going to be, we're going to give a little introduction on, I have some facts on like lottery history. I have some, you know, ideas on, I just want to let people know again who Victor Wembanyama is and why he's so valuable. And then we're going to talk a little bit about our criteria for how we, or how I rank these 14 teams. I don't want to throw Mark into the 14 of it all. I will throw him in. I think you did like five, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, I did. I did not go above and beyond for 14, but yeah. I did do five.
So Mark did five. I did 14. We'll run through the bottom teams relatively quickly and then get up to the top teams and talk about them. Okay. Let's start here with some lottery history. Over the 4 years that we have seen lottery reform at this point. So if you remember 5 years ago now, Adam Silver and the owners got together and decided that no longer are the worst teams in the league going to get a 25% chance at the first round pick. They're actually going to get down to 14%. And over the course of those 4 years, including the last 3 years, one of the top three teams that had a 14% chance to win the lottery won the lottery. So Orlando gets Paolo Banchero in 2022. In 2021, 14% chance. Detroit Pistons, one of the worst teams in the league, get Cade Cunningham. In 2020, 14% chance. Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the worst teams in the league, get Anthony Edwards. 2019, the New Orleans Pelicans jump up from a 6% chance. I believe they were the eighth worst team, and they jump up all the way to number one. Most years, we do get a team that jumps up into the top four from that, like, you know, 5 to 2% range, something like that, one of those teams in the bottom six or so. So it is working on some level. But what I will say here as well, the teams that have a 14% chance, the top three teams have something like a 42% chance, basically, to win the lottery every year, right? They have less than a 50% chance to win the lottery. So for us to have had three straight years of a 14% chance to win the lottery, win it, feels a little bit unlikely. And I wonder if we see a team kind of sky up from the bottom this year. Not the bottom, but like, you know, the middle of the pack, and kind of make it a little bit more interesting. God, I hope not for Detroit, Houston, San Antonio, Charlotte fans. But like, I don't know. I feel like this could be the year, because we've had three in a row, right? Like, we're due. That's not how stats work, and that's not how odds work, but we're due.
Yeah, it would be nice. I'm interested to see what happens. Cleveland's not in the lottery, so any kind of number one overall pick shenanigans cannot happen, it feels like, because every single ounce of it has gone to them in the last 20 years, it feels like. I'm curious, like, especially too, because like, when you think about the level of player that Vic is, and if he went to, like, I don't think it's going to happen, but, like, if he went to New Orleans, like, that would be wild, man. In terms of just crazy. pure talent that team would have, like, I don't know. It's kind of wild to wrap your head around. Also, not worth wrapping your head around, considering what the actual odds are for that happening. But
they have a 0.5% yeah. chance. And for what it's worth, I just want to make people clear. I see people in the comments already getting a little bit disappointed that some of the teams at the bottom may not be ranked highly here. I tried. So, like, the Pelicans, I'll spoil it. Like, they ranked number nine here. I tried to account for higher lottery odds ranking a little bit higher here in some respect, not like in a significant respect. There is one team that I've been very clear that I really want him to go to, that I ranked highly, that has a, you know, that is in the bottom four teams. We'll talk about them momentarily, but I just want to be clear. I tried to spread the wealth a little bit and tried to, like, make sure that it's not the best teams, you know, getting the best player, even though they have like a 10% chance combined to do it. Okay. Worth remembering just who Victor Wembanyama is. Mark, why is this lottery such a big deal? Who is Victor Wembanyama and why is he so highly sought after?
Victor Wembanyama is, like, at worst, the best number one overall prospect of the last decade. So
yes,
that's kind of a big deal. He's 7'4". He moves like a gazelle. He has a really advanced feel for the game that has only improved over the last year. And more importantly too, like, he's gone from, like, somebody who I thought, you know, this time last year, I looked at Vic as, he was already the clear number one guy for me, but I looked at him as, like, I think this guy could be one of the, like, an all-star level role player, like one of the, like, one of the best, if not the best rim protector in the NBA, who can play multiple coverages, who can shoot, and you can hopefully, like, get more out of him offensively as it goes on, to now, like, throughout this year, I think that there's something we'll have to do on a future pod is parsing through, you know, what the season has been for him.
Yeah.
But I think, like, he's really dipped his toe into, like, doing shot creation stuff and being 7'4" and having a handle and being coordinated. And, like, it's the kind of stuff that, like, you just, we've never seen anybody do it before. Like, people will say Kristaps, but it's not the same. Like, Kristaps didn't have that level of fluidity or coordination or ball skills. And, like, seeing that has been, I mean, to me, it's just, it makes it all that much more of a no-brainer with where he's at.
Yeah, so has been one of the best prospects in his age group for years upon years upon years now. Like, truly, it is kind of similar to, like, a European LeBron James. Like, people have been waiting for Victor Wembanyama for a long time, and he has been highly hyped, highly scouted, to the point where there has been, like, a very real feeling that this is the guy, this is a generational player. If you go back through the history of guys that have been, like, quote unquote, generational bigs, there aren't really any busts among them. Like, you can go all the way back to, like, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton. Ralph Sampson is maybe, like, the low end. And Ralph Sampson was, like, an all-star for the first 3 years of his career until injuries happened. He, like, won an all-star game MVP, was, like, unbelievably good. Then you keep going through history. Like, you get to Arvydas Sabonis, you get to Shaquille O'Neal, Anthony Davis, you know, Yao Ming on some level, I think, fits this billing, right? Like, all of these guys throughout the course of history, and I'm sure I'm missing, you know, a couple of them, you know, Patrick Ewing, Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, both highly sought after, highly touted number one overall picks for sure. All of these guys went on to be, like, at the very least, all-star level players until injuries hit them in some way, shape, or form. Wembanyama is very different than all of these guys because he came up in a modern basketball ecosystem and environment. He shoots threes, like, he takes guys off the bounce. But, like, I think that there is a lot of those guys in him, in terms of, like, how good he is athletically, how coordinated, how fluid his feet are for how big he is. He's an incredibly impressive prospect. You know, the one that I think, you know, Jordan Handelman brings up in the comments, Greg Oden. Greg Oden is probably the only one that really failed in terms of these, you know, quote unquote, generational bigs. So whenever we talk about, like, busts and the potential for Greg or for, you know, Victor Wembanyama to be a bust, it's relatively minimal based on history, at the very least. And it will all be due to injury if it does unfortunately happen. Now, like, skill set wise, I mean, probably the best shot blocking prospect to enter the NBA in a long time. I think he's literally doubling every other player in the French league right now in blocks per game. It's absolutely absurd. Really good anticipation, pretty good in drop coverage, although can get the corner turned on him occasionally. Doesn't really actually need to elevate to affect shots at the basket, like, can just stand there and just be have a 10-foot standing reach, essentially, and completely dominate the basket. Offensively, I think that that is where I was worried most throughout the course of his early development. But this year, he's just completely and utterly quelled all of those concerns and has become, you know, he's the leading scorer in the French league right now, a professional league that features numerous high-level professionals, features numerous, like, whatever you want to say, like the all conference, like college basketball players. Those guys go over there and play and like play really well typically, or in some cases don't play really well. That's the level that the French league is. It's quite high. His ability to handle is unlike anything I've seen from someone who is a super giant, has real crossovers, has real shake, like can play at pace, can change speeds. That's what makes him so special athletically. It's the coordination and the bounce. It's not necessarily the, you know, explosiveness that he leaps off the ground with, right? You know, driving capabilities are there. Incredible finisher at the basket. I mean, look, like if you want to complain in some way, like a bit of a high center of gravity, I guess, but like does play with pretty good bend. Like that's part of why he's such a good ball handler, is because he has that ability to bend. So, I mean, have I covered it all, Mark? Like he's leading the French league right now in points, rebounds, and blocks. Like he's, you know, carrying Metropolitan's 92. I believe they're second in the French league right now as of the time of this recording. He's winning basketball games. He's played every game this year. That is, you know, one thing that's worth noting. Injuries early on in his career were handled very conservatively, I think it's worth saying. But also, you know, he suffered a few injuries last year. Like I think he had like a core muscle injury late in the year that ended up shutting him down. What else here? I'm looking through my notes. He had a right shoulder blade bone bruise that caused him to miss a month in December 2021, broke a finger in November 2021. And then I think in December 2020 suffered a stress fracture in his leg. So these things have happened with him, and I think it's worth noting. Particularly, it's worth noting, I will get this occasionally from scouts where they'll say, you know, this year he's playing a schedule that basically is like one game every 6 days or so. Last year for Asvel, the team he played for previously, which was a EuroLeague team, he had a more onerous schedule where they played like 75 games or so over the course of a full season. And, you know, there is a question in some respect, I guess, of like how the body will hold up over that kind of wear and tear, which is more similar to an NBA season. So with all of that being said, there is no team in the NBA that would not take Victor Wembanyama number one. I think he is the best prospect to enter the NBA since LeBron James. All due respect to Greg Oden, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Zion Williamson, et cetera, et cetera. At some point, I will do that story for The Athletic. Yeah, this is, I think that is, that's the best place to kind of lead into this, right?
For sure.
Okay. Mark, how did you go about making your rankings? What was your criteria?
A little bit of vibes, to be honest. Love it. I think vibes definitely factors in heavily. But I think the biggest thing for me is I want to see him either, I think, like, you know me, I normally am very much gray area on things. I like having nuance and minuteness to it. But for me, I looked at this either as I want to see him put in a place where he's going to succeed immediately in a defined role, or I want him to go to a place where he can really just spread wings and find out what the hell he is. Not like, of course, like he's a number one overall pick, so it's not like I think it's not going to be like that anywhere. But like there is like a real range for places that you're looking at. Like there are some places that already kind of have a defined ish number one option. And so I feel like, to me, I think part of what makes him so interesting is that you could legitimately see him slotting in and becoming like, okay, maybe this is like the third best offensive option on a championship team someday. Or like at the other way, it's like, okay, well maybe he's the first best option on like a 60 win team because he just ends up being that good.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, to me, it's just, there's just no in between for it. Like I want to see something concrete or just complete mold of clay.
Yep. Okay. My criteria was, I tried to think about it from a star perspective because I think Victor Wembanyama can come in immediately and play a high level impact role in the NBA. I tried to think about it from the perspective of, is there a core that he can grow with? Right? Like, does this team have like a roster that makes sense around him in terms of being able to mature and like grow into his game while they grow into their game around him? Basically like a younger core that really would work. Finally, organizational competence is like a big thing for me here. I want him to go to a spot where, like, I have faith in the people running the show long term. Like, I think that those are the teams that have the best chance to build rosters long term, basically, around Victor Wembanyama. This team's going to have probably 9 years or 8 years to build around Vic. So having that competence, having that that organizational, just general confidence that I have in them played a big factor here. Let's get started. Number 14, we're going to go bottom to top. Number 14, the Washington Wizards. I have no desire to see him go to the Wizards.
It's my 14th.
The Wizards, yeah, the Wizards currently have no general manager. I think they have an acting general manager in John Thompson III, who was like a college basketball coach. Like,
wait, John Thompson III? How am I just now figuring this out? And what?
Yeah, JT3.
Was he consulting for them, or was he working in the front office?
I think he was like kind of working for Monumental Sports. More than okay. In like their front office. I don't have a ton of faith in like Ted Leonsis and that group right now, based off of what we've seen over the course of the last decade. This team also is just a little bit older as well. If you look at their actual core pieces, like Bradley Beal, Kristaps, you know, these guys are in their primes already. And none of them are like the real, you know, all NBA players, right? Like Bradley Beal's made an all NBA team, you know, I think reasonably could make another one at some point, but he also, I think, does not have like a crazy amount of time on his contract. Kristaps, obviously next to Vic, is not an ideal fit, in my opinion. Kyle Kuzma's hitting free agency this year. It's just all around not the best result, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, the only positive thing I can say is that I want good things to happen to Wizards fans. Like that that fan base has kind of just gone through hell over the last 5 or 6 years with, you know, John's injuries and the way that they've handled that franchise since they last made a playoff. Well, a meaningful playoff appearance, I should say, in like 2016-17. Yep. So, yeah. I'm just pretty out on that happening for them, though, because for everything that you laid out, this team is – and it's so much less about the team. Like, I don't think that Tommy was an incredible front office exec, but also I think it's pretty well documented how much this really isn't on him. Like, you can only do so much as an executive, same as what happened with the Kings for a really long time under Vivek. Like, if you have an owner who handicaps what you can do – there's not really a lot you can do about it. And as long as Ted Leonsis is owning the Washington Wizards, I think it's going to be a problem.
Okay. And under the organizational competence corollary here as well, my number 13 is the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are by far the team I want him among teams at the top that have a real chance to get him. I just don't want him there, to be honest. This team under Michael Jordan has shown very little in terms of just building a roster that like really truly makes sense, in my opinion. I don't think we've seen it from this group basically at all. I don't trust their front office really at all. I don't trust their evaluation strategies. Like, it feels like, look, I think they did hit on Mark Williams last year. Like, I am generally a Mark Williams believer. I also just, they hit on, you know, LaMelo Ball obviously as well. And they've hit on some other lower level players. Like, they've drilled, you know, Cody Martin, for instance, is a valuable player, but like, I don't know. Like, it feels like from a cap perspective, it feels like from, they've taken a lot of shortcuts. Like, you know, going and getting Gordon Hayward was an attempt at a shortcut. You know, signing Kelly Oubre and Mason Plumlee, like, or trading for Mason Plumlee, like, those were like attempted shortcuts to me to try and like expedite this. And I worry that if Vic would go there, while I would really enjoy the LaMelo Ball, Victor Wembanyama fit, and I think it'd be really fun, I worry about if they would just immediately try to take the shortcut. And that is my just absolute concern that I don't want to see, even though I think Vic can help you win sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think I agree. I will say, like, it would be extremely fun to watch Steve Clifford build a defense around him.
Yeah.
So I'm probably a little bit higher on them with that regard, because I do think, as much as this season sucked for Charlotte, there was a lot better going on than in the year prior and even the year before that, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I think that that's
those they won 43 games last year. Like, they were pretty good last. Yeah, they were pretty good last year.
Wait, like, you mean 2021, right?
No, 2021-22, the Charlotte Hornets won 43 games. Like, that happened because LaMelo made the All-Star game, remember?
Oh, yeah.
They were, like, okay. Like, and then they get rid of James Borrego, who was running, like, a really fun, you know, free-flowing offense. And, look, I'm not saying that Borrego was, like, some incredible coach. I think he's fine. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, it just feels like there's so many moving pieces, so many moving parts. Obviously, you can't – if you're them, you can't anticipate the Miles Bridges situation occurring. I don't know enough about Miles before this moment, you know, in terms of him as a human. Maybe there was something there. I have no idea on that. But at the end of the day, I get that they were a little bit unlucky this year. But, like, you just look through their past trajectory, like, even as a franchise, like, they just haven't – there's never really been a point where they've been – like, they've been good, unfortunately, it feels like.
They're like the little stretch with Kemba and Al Jefferson, but even then, like, that was a pretty weak East. They were punching above their weight a little bit. I agree.
I guess they pushed the Heat in the playoffs that year. Like, looking back, like, pushed a 7-game series against Miami that year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my bigger concern is more just what their ability to develop and identify talent in, you know, the second round, not second round, in their ability to identify and develop talent in the lottery has just been a big problem. And I think, to be fair, I don't want to say too much, but, like, part of it is just, like, they have not done a good job at all of personalities, like, meshing personalities in the organization. I think that's been pretty clear. We can move on because we're in agreement here.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just looking back since they've been the Bobcats, right? You know, they get into the league 2004, 2005. I mean, like, they've won 3 playoff games in that time.
Yeah. Right? It was all in the same year. So it's like,
yeah, all in the same year. I mean, it's going to be tough. I don't really trust them to build around Vic. Okay. Number 12, the Chicago Bulls. While I'm intrigued by him going to a bigger market like Chicago, and by the way, the Bulls may not end up with their pick. It's worth stating as well. Their pick goes to Orlando as long as it falls outside of the top 4 in this draft. There's a very real chance that this could end up being Orlando's draft pick. There's, you know, something like I would imagine a 95% chance. No, it's 91.5% chance this pick goes to the Orlando Magic. But if they end up in the top 4, this will be Chicago's pick, which means if they get the number 1 overall pick, Chicago is the team that gets Victor Wembanyama. The reason I have Chicago lower is because I feel like their core does not really align with Victor Wembanyama's, like, age range, basically. DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine. Zach is not, like, older, but Zach does have some, like, tread on the tires at this point, just in terms of the knee issues that he's had a little bit here and there over the course of his career. He just turned 28 years old, not wildly older, but, like, a little bit. I worry about how he will age in some respect. DeMar DeRozan obviously is, I believe, 34. I think he turns 34 in August this year. And then beyond that, I mean, Nikola Vucevic is a free agent. The Pat Williams pick, I think, is still developing, let's go with. And then it's like Ayo Dosunmu, Alex Caruso, Kobe White, while also being a little bit capped out moving forward. Not a great situation, I think, for Wembanyama to end up in.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm probably a little bit higher just because I, like you mentioned, I think with Chicago being a place that when they're better can draw free agents, like I have confidence in that. But I'll also, I'm just kind of at the point of until Jerry Reinsdorf sells the team, I don't really want anybody to go to Chicago. So I respectfully, like I feel bad for my friends who are Chicago Bulls fans. I would like, I think what he could do raising their ceiling would be really fun. Like, I think I'm very interested to see what they do with Vooch this year, because that is a sneakily like a massive decision for them in what they do or don't do with him. I think more so than anything with Levine and DeMar. And like, I think even if you're just like just adding Vic to, let's say if they re-sign Vooch, which I don't think is ideal, if they just added Vic to what this group was this last year, like that team is like pretty comfortably a playoff team to me. So I think like, especially with how they like to play defensively, I think like that you're cooking with grease with that. But
you're cooking with grease for like first 4 years, and then you have to completely rebuild again.
For sure. But like, I think I look at it too, like, I don't mind, I don't know, like, I don't mind having that. Like, I like the idea of him getting playoff tested early, even if it's not like deep playoff runs or whatever. Just getting those reps, getting those opportunities. It's harder to do. It's more for me as like an analyst, I like that. I think it's a lot harder to do as an organization, because like, okay, you do that right away, and then it's like, well, what happens if we dip down? And when our core ages out around him? Like, I think that is a bigger question, but so it's harder to thread that needle or whatever, but it would be interesting. But yeah, I think I'm generally lower on them too.
Yeah. Number 11 for me, the Toronto Raptors. Now, this is just in part because A, they're a little bit lower on the potential that this could actually happen. Like, they have a 1% chance to end up with Victor Wembanyama, and I accounted for that a little bit here. The reason they're lower, though, is largely just because they have so much uncertainty this summer in terms of their organizational direction long term, right? I actually love the idea of Victor Wembanyama next to Scotty Barnes. I think that would really actualize Scotty Barnes in a way that he really needs. I like the idea of going super long, aggressive. He is the ideal and the embodiment of Project 6ix9ine, or whatever, you know, Raptors fans are calling it now, right? Except he's Project 7'4", 7'5", whatever he is. So that piece of it would be really interesting. I just kind of bumped them down a little bit simply because they have a 1% chance of getting him, and I want to account more higher in these rankings for some of the teams that I think have a real chance. Also worth noting, though, Fred VanVleet free agent, Gary Trent free agent, OG Anunoby situation seems to be hitting a real inflection point, let's go with, in terms of whether or not he moves this summer. So largely this is due to actual lottery odds, but they do also have some real questions moving forward.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I want to see him play alongside a pretty strong guard. And with it looking kind of unlikely that Fred's going to be back.
Is it?
I would just be, it seems like it to me. I could be wrong on that. That's my read. I am not optimistic that it's happening. Maybe, like, I feel like it's more likely that a sign and trade happens than him actually returning. But
I don't know.
Maybe that's like, different with Nick gone now. Because But I don't know. Regardless, like, I think I would probably. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I'm fairly low on him going to Toronto. I just want to see them. Like, they're the team that I would love to see, like, somehow get Scoot. That would be like really
fun. That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be really fun. If they were on the Scoot rankings, they'd be very high to me.
Yeah.
They'd be very, very high. Okay. The number 10 team is the Utah Jazz. And I think this is where we enter a tier where I actually feel bad having the Jazz this low, because I quite like this Jazz front office. I think they've done a pretty good job of identifying and evaluating talent. I think they've done a really good job of making smart trades. Obviously, the Rudy Gobert move has really, really helped them. They have a ton of asset capital moving forward. I just don't love like the current talent on the roster in terms of like a fit next to Vic at the end of the day. Like, and some of them like don't have a lot of time left on their contracts, right? So like Lowry is in an interesting circumstance now where, you know, he is under a deal that I think is like for three or two more years at $35 million. And I actually wonder if that number and that contract is so low that you're actually going to be able to try and extend him. Like he might not be able to, even under the new CBA, like he might cost more than, what is it? I think it'd be like $26, $27 million in terms of the first year extension number that he can agree to under the new collective bargaining agreement, where it's 140% of the final year on the contract. So like, I worry a little bit about that. I worry about just the rest of the guys currently on this roster. And also like they have Walker Kessler. Walker Kessler is probably their second best asset moving forward at this point. Right. And if your second best asset is like a true center, I worry a little bit about your fit with Wembanyama. I think this Jazz, if they end up with him, I think they'd figure it out. They have a million assets moving forward and they'd be fantastic. I think basically there isn't a bad fit moving forward. They're just a little bit lower for me.
Yeah, I think part of it's just that, like you mentioned, like Lowry was really exciting and interesting this year. The idea of them as a front court tandem is actually, that could be really cool.
Yeah.
The rest of their roster is such a blank slate to me. That I'd be really interested to see, you know, where that goes. And part of what's interesting about Walker playing as well as he did his rookie year, and I'm not that I'm advocating for this, but like I think that like you're automatically getting a return of value that's going to be bigger than what it was for what you gave up for him in making the pick. So I do wonder, because like I feel like I can't even like think off the top of my head of like prime examples, but I feel like there have been guys who performed super well their rookie year, and if you flip them earlier, it probably nets you more return than what happens after playing out the rest of a rookie contract. So not saying that that's what's going to happen. I don't love using that terminology, but along those lines, I think that there is, it's interesting if that somehow happened, but it's just like far away from actually happening.
Yeah. It'd be interesting what they would do with, like, would they play super big? Cause they played super big this year at times. Like they were happy to play Olynyk, Lowry and Kessler together at times. Would they just try and play super big with Vic? I don't know. But it's an interesting there is not a bad fit among this top 10, in my opinion. Vic is so good, and I think there would be really, really fun groups that would make this intriguing. But Utah, just being such a blank slate, ended up kind of falling a little bit lower, even though I also do – like, I trust, you know, Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, like, their front office. I think they do a pretty good job. And I think that they would figure all of this out with all of the many assets they have moving forward. Okay. Number nine. I downgraded the Pelicans here, again, as I mentioned at the top, just because they have a 0.5% chance to actually end up with Vic. Having said that, there's only one player in the front court that I would be more excited to watch with Victor Wembanyama than Zion Williamson. Like, I need to see that. It'd be amazing. The Pelicans would be an incredible, fun spot for him. Pairing him with Zion, Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, this team probably immediately becomes a title contender, if we're being honest. I just downgraded them because they have a 0.5% chance to get him.
Yeah, no, I think that's all fair. In my like hypothetical dreamland scenario of a team getting him, it's them. Like, I think that would be fantastic for a team that is like, and I know some people probably disagree with this, but I think for me, like, no team has been hurt more by injuries, it feels like, in the last, at least in my lifetime, when I've really been connected with basketball, like since like 2013-14, it's really hard to find an organization that's been absolutely slaughtered more by injuries than them. Like, yeah. The way that things worked out during the AD years, like, a lot of that goes back to what their front office did or didn't do. But also, like, okay, you look at what happened with Tyreke Evans there, what happened with Eric Gordon there, like, injuries just always popped up and were such an issue. Even with Drew, like, Drew dealt with injuries when he was there. You obviously, AD's slew of injuries, like, all this stuff with Zion now. I really would love to see that get course corrected by the basketball gods, but it does not seem super likely. And hopefully that just happens through, you know, things writing out this next year for them.
Yeah. Number eight, the Orlando Magic. The Magic on their face seem like the ideal organization for Victor Wembanyama, because they love these guys that are super long, super athletic, you know, shot creators, you know, good defenders, etc. Right. You can go back through their draft history. They love selecting these guys. They take, you know, Jonathan Isaac, they take Mo Bamba, they take, you know, Franz Wagner's, you know, enormous positional size, right? Paulo Banchero, 6'10" shot creator, right? Go back through their history. You will continue to find it. Chuma Okiki, they valued Bol Bol as a player to try and acquire. Like Wendell Carter was acquired. Markel Fultz was acquired. Like, these guys all have super long arms, some like some real latent basketball skill, and, you know, real, not in all of their cases, athleticism, but in most cases, they're very, 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 very high level athletes. They just have a lot of them right now, and it feels very cluttered. If we add another Victor Wembanyama in there, I would be very intrigued by a Franz Wagner, Paulo Banchero, Victor Wembanyama front court, but it would require, you have to move Jonathan Isaac, you have to move Wendell Carter, you have to move, you know, X, Y, and Z guys, it feels like, at that point. And you can do that. Like, you have, you're more than capable of doing it. Those guys, you know, certainly Wendell Carter at least has value. It just feels very cluttered, kind of, if you add Vic to the mix compared to some of these other potential teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have them a lot higher just because of the,
the fun factor.
I would like to see it. that, like, the idea of throwing out a lineup where you have, like, Paolo, Franz, Vic, and insert whoever the fuck else you want to, like, that.
Yeah,
that's wildly fun to me. I love what that could be. Because I mean, we've just never seen anything like that before. Like, that's just different. And so, yeah, I think I had them finishing at fourth for me.
Yeah. No, like I said, we're in that range now where I think there's no wrong answer anymore for where you want Vic to end up. Number seven, I went with the San Antonio Spurs, almost entirely on an organizational competence idea. This roster is largely a blank slate outside of, like, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan. I'm not quite as high on Malachi Branham as some people are. I get
that. I know that
you're a big fan. And obviously Blake Wesley is a first round pick last year. I'm not quite as high on him either. I think I had him as, like, a late first round grade last year. I had Malachi at, like, 20 last year. And I think, like, where they took him is totally reasonable. And I think he's going to be, like, a very good long-term player. He just might be, like, a sixth man as opposed to, like, you know, great starting caliber shooting guard, although that ceiling entirely exists and I acknowledge it, if he can continue to improve defensively and as a decision maker. Daniel Garrett, OSU hater, Sam Vecenie aside, went on the Mark Titus show this week. Titus and I have this long running bit where he continues to think that I don't acknowledge my Ohio State fandom and the fact that I went to Ohio State and have, like, a real history at the university. I love the school. I just want to be clear. I love Ohio State. Shout out Columbus. Beautiful, beautiful city. One of my favorite places in the world. Just don't always shout it out from the rooftops, you know? I apologize.
The people are prepared for EJ Liddell's amended rookie year coming up.
God, I hope so. That'd be great. Shout out EJ. But yeah, the Sochan Wembanyama mix would be something, like, I desperately would want to see. Devin Vassell obviously has turned into, like, a really solid two-way guard, you know, continuing to grow and mature as a on-ball player at a really high level. I like, you know, Keldon Johnson continues to kind of ride the roller coaster for me a little bit, just in terms of the shooting as much as anything. I think he really has to become a little bit more efficient to that. Look, I think that it'd be really fun to see Vic end up in San Antonio. And by the way, great track record of bigs in San Antonio under Greg Popovich, right? You know, going from David Robinson to Tim Duncan, you know, hopefully now, you know, for San Antonio fans' sakes, Victor Wembanyama would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Part of what I like about the idea of him, because I have San Antonio third, part of what I love about the idea of him to San Antonio is getting to just have that blank slate a little bit and kind of getting to be not quote unquote the guy stepping in. Like, I think there are guys who would have more usage or whatever, but I think with that roster, part of what is still alluring to me about them is that they have a lot of interesting potential talent, while also having a lot of archetypes that can all kind of play together without really having a straight up go-to. Cause I don't think Kelden is that. I've been blunt on this for a long time. I'm higher on Devin than Devin is the guy on the roster that I'm most high on out of anybody. Yeah. And I like Sohan a lot. And I think him and Vic could be interesting. There's just a lot to be interested about. The only thing that keeps them lower for me is I just would like him to be able to go somewhere that isn't automatically connected to, Tim Duncan, David Robinson, like you just mentioned. Like, having him be able to go somewhere kind of – obviously, he's creating his own name and legacy regardless, but, like, man, I don't care. Like,
The only thing that makes them lower for me personally and why I dropped them to 7 is Greg Popovich is not going to be around for the entirety of Victor Wembanyama's career. He probably won't be around for, like, you know, year 5 of Victor Wembanyama, you would think, right? So what does this organization look like without Greg Popovich, I think, is a real question. You know, RC Buford, Brian Wright, those guys in the front office, you know, they've done an okay job. You know, RC has done a great job. We'll see what the newer regime of the front office looks like moving forward. I think they've done pretty well since Brian Wright took over as general manager. But I would like to know a little bit more about the organizational direction without Greg Popovich, which is why they come in at 7.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 6, Mark, your Indiana Pacers. Explain to me why you love the Indiana Pacers for Victor Wembanyama. I want to give you the floor on this because you are a Pacers guy.
Yeah, I have them 5. I think just mainly it's just him and Haliburton together.
Yes.
I like that. That's really it. I think probably why I'm higher on them in general than I think maybe a lot of people would be for the potential fit is that as much as the organization has been somewhat frustrating in the last couple of years, ever since Paul got injured, I think that they've really struggled with some stuff. But I do think that they have really turned a leaf and turned a corner. And also, like, it's still very much like the same front office from the early 2000s, like not front office, but brain trust, I should say. And ideology to a degree. And I think that this is a group that if they have the talent, they're going to be willing to really be consistent and build around that. And I like that. I think that that would be really enticing. And just the idea of having, I mean, Haliburton and Victor would be the best two-man pairing that they've ever had. Like,
yeah, and Rick Carlisle would understand how to get the most out of them. I think that Carlisle is a phenomenal basketball coach. That having that like institutional knowledge, I think, would really be excellent for Wembanyama as well.
Yeah, no, that'd be really fun. I would love to see that. Would help out a lot defensively for it to kind of take away some of the flaws that they have. I would be very interested. Oh, yeah.
As I pop this up on our screen from Jacob Levengood, I feel like Wembanyama could really clean up some of the Haliburton, Ben Mathurin defensive concerns.
I need them to clean it up first. Because that was, Ben was probably a top. If you're doing like guys who played 500 minutes or more, Benedict might have been the worst perimeter defender in the league this year.
I thought he was really bad. That's really why, like, Pacers fans like really got on me when I did the redraft this week, and I had Mathurin at 10. He's really, really rough defensively. Like, it is a mess on that end right now. And it, by the way, with him, it's been a mess going back to Arizona. Like, this is not like there was a rookie adjustment.
He got called 3-and-D all the time in pre-draft stuff, and I would like to see it because I have not. He's athletic and 3, but yeah. I'm hopeful. You know, we'll see what happens. I still think that he's going to be really good, but regardless, interesting fit. I had, just to clarify, because now that we're in my top 5, I had Houston 6th. I would so much rather see Scoot go to Houston than Wemby.
So let's talk about Houston, because I have Houston at 5. Okay. So this will be good. I have the Houston Rockets at number 5. I am very much intrigued by the idea of a Wembanyama, Şengün, Jabari Smith front court. I'm very much intrigued by pairing those guys with certainly Jalen Green in the backcourt. I am also thinking that the upgrade from Steven Silas to Ime Udoka will be enormous. I think Steven Silas was probably the worst coach in the NBA last year. Sorry, Steven. He was really, really bad. The decisions that he would make night after night were maddening. The accountability factor was very, very real. It was insane. Drove me nuts. I'm a little bit worried, like, about giving him to, like, the Fertittas and, like, them consistently building a winner around him. The thing is that they already have this organizational infrastructure of young dudes that are pretty good, where I like to think that it would be, like, unfuck-upable on some level. Like, they still need one more guy, I think, even beyond Vic. But the other thing is that, like, they have a shit ton of cap space this summer, too. They could, like, really invest and figure out how to make this roster work well. I'm in on Vic to Houston. Like, I know that a lot of people, like, I've talked to, like, a lot of people, like, within league circles that are like, God, I hope that, like, Houston doesn't end up with Victor Wembanyama. Just because of, like, the perception of the organization-wide stuff, I think, is maybe a little bit worse than it is internally in terms of, like, how they feel about it. It's just, I feel like we can find some better spots at the same time, and I'm not uncomfortable with Vic there. I really like the idea of mixing him with some of the talent they already have, and I think Udoka will be big. I also just think there are better fits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I would just, I think it's fine. I just, like, kind of like you're mentioning. I would like him to go to a much better playmaking team, like just a team that has better floor of passing. Like somebody mentioned in the comments, like they have a lot of cap space. I'll just be interested to see what they actually do with it and what that looks like. Cause I think it always sounds better in principle than it ends up being most of the time. Especially with where they're at as a team right now. I don't know what vet is like, I'm going to go sign in Houston. I don't know. Like that'll could end up being wrong, but I am curious to see what that looks like. So yeah.
Well, let's acknowledge the James Harden rumors that have been persistent, right? Like that is a thing that has been out there. I don't know if that's real or not. It is something that has been noted in the media. Let's go with though. About James Harden potentially going back to Houston. I actually do kind of agree with this on some level from Jet. I feel like a lot of people say Houston is a mess and their only explanation for how is that they heard people around the league say Houston is a mess and that it's circular. I do agree with that. I think a lot of the mess this year was not front office driven. I think it was genuinely like that coaching staff was not very good. And I think that they will be better served by a different staff being there that hopefully can hold some of these younger guys accountable. And it's just really hard when you have a lot of young guys like all together at once. So I'm not as big of a like, oh my God, the Rockets are a mess guy as everybody else is, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think that there was definite stuff that you didn't want to see coming out of there. But also I think it's worth noting how many organizations are not saying that every organization is a shit show, but you can find not great stuff on every organization that they're dealing with. So it's basically nowhere is perfect is the best way to put it.
That's right. Okay. Number four, the Detroit Pistons. This is solely based on who they have on this roster. I would love to watch Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Victor Wembanyama actions for the next 7 years. Like that would be amazing to me. Watching Cade and Vic just think through like ball screens for that long would be the coolest environment for him to end up in. The reason that they are not number one is I am deathly terrified that Troy Weaver and this, you know, whoever they end up with as a coaching staff, but Troy Weaver particularly because he keeps signing these guys, I would be terrified that they would try to run out a lineup of like Victor Wembanyama, one of Isaiah Stewart or Marvin Bagley, and then Jalen Duren. Like, I'd be terrified they're going to try and play Victor Wembanyama as a three.
I don't see that. Like, maybe Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being too optimistic. I just kind of doubt that happens. That would be kind of hilarious. Because like just the idea of like seeing how much you can mess around defensively, or just having size, not necessarily defensively, just having that much size, like that's interesting. But I do want to say, like, I have Detroit number two, because the idea of, like, you mentioned Caden Ivey, but I was like, imagine Jalen Duren and Victor Wembanyama getting to play together. Like, that, because I love Jalen Duren.
You love Duren. I'm ambivalent on Duren a little bit.
I think part of, like, it's a double-edged sword a little bit, because I think to me, I really want to see a team start to empower Jalen as a passer, because I think they did it times last year. I think that's something that, if you're going to get the most out of him, you're going to do more of that, because he can, like, he really has some ability to do that.
I think that it's very latent, and I think it's something that he has a real chance to develop over the course of the next few
years. Yeah, exactly. I think that part of, like, that's why I'm like, I mean, he was the youngest.
It's just, not there not yet, though.
In the NBA last year. Yeah. So I'm like, when I look at him,
yeah,
like, it's been stuff that he's shown over the last couple of years. I want to see a team really try and rep that out and get more of it from him. This is my point. But, like, I also very much disagree with the idea that Jalen's just a rim running big, but
I don't think he's a great rim runner right now, to be honest. I think that, like, in ball screens, he needs to dive harder to the basket consistently. A lot of the time what I see from him is he's a great offensive rebounder, crushes the offensive glass. And then also, does do some of that, like, playmaking from the high post and things like that. And he can rim run, obviously, but more than anything, I think he's good in the dunker spot and is good as, like, an offensive rebounder at the moment.
Well, I think part of what makes it fun is it's not even, like, obviously you want to see more stuff develop from him, but my thing is more, okay, you have a guy who has a fairly decent feel for the game, who moves incredibly well at his size, and it's the same thing with Victor. And you have those two guys together, like, I think to me, like, with what Jalen showed defensively already, and you put those, I think, like, it's potential defense. He still needs to work on his drop defense for sure. A lot of it was who was in front of him, to me. Like, yeah, I think a lot of it was in front of him. What he already showed is somebody who can really be an impactful rim protector, who obviously has room to grow. Again, like, I think when you put the idea of putting those two together is incredibly enticing to me. And having Cade, like, I think what that opens up for Cade is, like, awesome. Like, having Victor paired alongside somebody who's going to be a top 5 to 10 passer in the NBA his entire career, like, yeah, that's pretty awesome to me. I'm very in on that. And then you add in Jaden Ivey, who is like that. I mean, just like the sheer difference in kinds of guys you have, who all have potential to be like the peak of what they do, is really fun. I would definitely want to see them change up a lot of their supporting cast for sure, but I mean, they're in that stage. That's what they do.
Yeah. I think I'm a little lower on Duren's defensive, like, anticipation stuff than you are. I think that, like, some of the weak side rim protection stuff wasn't awesome this year. I thought he was a little bit late on a lot of those. I thought the drop was a little bit of a mess this year. I totally agree with you that the guys that were in front of him were even a bigger issue than he was, for sure. I like Jalen. I think he's, like, definitely a starting center long term, like, no question. That's my, like, I'm trying to figure out, is the ceiling, like, is it Andre Drummond? Is it?
Oh, I think his ceiling's better than that.
Is it, like, something more than that?
Like, I think he can. I think he'll be a better offensive player, and also, well, I think he'll be a better offensive
player. Andre got to the point where he could also really pass, though, and, like, could play in dribble handoffs and could, like, do a lot of that stuff by the end of his career.
In Detroit. Well, I think he'll be a better defender than Andre, like, pretty easily. Because Andre was, like, just never a good rim protector. Like, he got blocks, but it wasn't, like, he was never really deterring people and
couldn't really bad in space.
Foot.
Yeah.
But no, and I think one thing I do want to bring up to you, because Mr. Loki 01 said no spacing issues for Detroit ? Part of what I like about that is that I do think, like, I honestly think that it would be better for their spacing to have Vic and Jalen than some of the stuff that they ran out this year when they had four smalls on the perimeter. Like, their actual ability to attack the shooting that they could put together sometimes was so minimal that it just didn't matter. Like, I think that's something that we see with with the Celtics a little bit right now. Not it's very different, obviously, but like think of it in the terms of, okay, the Celtics run a ton of guys who are, and Nekias Duncan and Steve Jones were talking about this on Old Man the Three today. Like, part of the issue for the Celtics is like, okay, we have all these guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot, but they're the same size. So what if we just switch it? Like, you have to have some counters and ability to do things that aren't just the one pinnacle thing. And I think, especially as we've seen offensive rebounding become more in vogue, for instance, the Knicks this year, I believe, had one of the highest offensive rebound percentages that we've seen in like the last decade. Like, that is really ratcheted up. It's not just a, we need to spread the floor. I think people are starting to figure out how to use size a lot better instead of the initial wave that we saw in the last decade in the Golden State boom of like, oh, well, let's just spread the floor. Like, okay, yeah, you got to spread the floor, but it's got to be balanced. So I do think that there's a lot of intrigue in having double big lineups. It just has to be the right ones.
Okay. Number three, I have the Dallas Mavericks.
I do not. I have the I do not.
Watching Luka Doncic and Victor Wembanyama would be like world breaking, I think. Period. End of statement. Like, what does Dallas desperately need? They need front court size and rim protection. What does Victor Wembanyama provide? He brings all of that and more. Like, what could they use in the front court? Another shot creator to play next to Kyrie and Luka. Boom, right there, Victor Wembanyama. This is like a very real potential dynasty if they don't fuck up building the pieces around Luka and Victor Wembanyama.
I think my thing right now, like from a watchability standpoint and what that would mean talent-wise, I'm so there. Like, for all of my friends who are Dallas Mavericks fans, hell yes, I would love that for them. I just am so much – I'm not very high on the Mavs organization, if we're being completely honest. Like,
oh, you shouldn't be. They're sneaky mess, well, I think, is I'm, like a real thing.
That's why I wouldn't be a very big fan of it, just from that aspect. I think they're a lot closer to having to make a new coaching decision soon than we felt like it was going to be a couple months ago. I just don't really trust them to make good decisions right now, because they haven't. Like, when obviously the Luka pick has been fantastic, but I don't know. Like, I'm just not super in on that. Like, they're a top 10 team, but I'm not very high.
So, like, here's the thing. It's almost impossible, I think, to fuck up Luka and Wembanyama, especially when you also have Kyrie. Like, I think it's actually impossible to fuck that up, because we're seeing it right now with the Lakers, right? The Lakers entirely fucked up this roster heading into the season. And you still have all of the ability, even with limited pick capital, to go out and just change the trajectory of your team in the middle of a season just by getting different role players and shaking up the core a little bit. Like, when you have Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Victor Wembanyama, all of them can shoot, all of them can handle the ball. Certainly Luka and Kyrie can pass. I think that's like maybe the one part of Vic's game that like is like 10% shaky at times, is like the passing ability, making reads. I think he's going to be really good at it eventually. It's just that right now, like, you can see like sometimes the gears turn a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can put like any defensive 3-and-D guys like around them and it's going to work. You basically just need defense at that point. And you can find those guys. Like, I think you can find your Jared Vanderbilts. You can find, you know, your Dorian Finney-Smiths. Like, seriously, just go draft like Emmanuel Miller at that point and be like, okay, we're going all in on like switchable defense. And like, hopefully Emmanuel Miller learns to shoot at that point. Right. Like, I think that those guys are easier to find than anybody else. And when you're going with Luka, Kyrie, Wembanyama, it actually is genuinely impossible to fuck up, I think.
Yeah, that's fair, but also like I'm probably lower on that because I feel like even in my lifetime I've seen so many things that I felt were impossible to fuck up that have been fucked up. So I don't know. I'm lower on that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the vibes. You did your list off of vibes, and that's an important part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two. The Oklahoma City Thunder. I moved them down to two. Mostly because the only reason I moved them down to two is because they only have a 1.7.
You and I have the same number one, by the way.
To win. I love it. It's great. Yeah. Oklahoma City, I desperately would enjoy seeing the, you know, Chet Holmgren, Victor Wembanyama front court that nobody would be able to score on the interior, just straight up. You'd have no chance. You'd get to see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Vic, which would be unbelievable. You'd get to see Josh Giddey just dropping dimes all over the place for Vic. This is like the ideal, like most fun. In terms of fun, this is the number one spot, I think. Like, no questions asked. Again, I ranked the top team at number one largely because they have quite literally a 10% better chance, or a 10 times better chance of getting him than this.
Yeah. I would be extremely in on seeing it. It kind of like in some ways would feel like the quote unquote like capstone of everything that they've done over the last couple of years to get here. I still like, I think it's fine. Like I it would be very fun, but I just like, it almost feels like an embarrassment of riches in some ways. So I don't know entirely, but yeah, I mean, I think it, again, it would be very cool, especially from a basketball standpoint of like the only thing that they've really been missing that like they need shooting and they need a true big, and that's really it. So yeah, it would complete a lot of things for them.
Yeah. And like, by the way, I didn't even mention Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams is a stud. Jalen Williams is a future. Like they have five future max guys at that point. If they end up with Victor Wembanyama, it's a absolutely just disgusting group of talent.
Okay. Here's my,
and by the way,
I will put them top five. If they do a rebrand, do a rebrand. Oh, and I will be fine with it. No, they can obviously not saying they have to change up being the Thunder, but get some new jerseys, man. I hate these jerseys.
Tyler Nevins.
Seriously, it looks like a NASCAR car. That's what they're like.
Oh my god!
The stripes down the side remind me of all the time.
That's amazing. Tyler Nevins asks, does OKC have the draft capital to move up from number two to number three, or number three for Wembanyama at number one? I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has that kind of capital this year to be able to move up from number two to number one for Vic. Ultimately, you go up and you're trying to find Victor Wembanyama's by acquiring draft capital. That is the entirety of trying to acquire draft capital. I think there is no chance that any team will trade the number one overall pick this year. Okay. Let's see. Is there anything else I have to say about Oklahoma City? Oh, yeah, they have five max guys. The other thing about this would be the way that the new collective bargaining agreement is going to work, you're going to be able to pay your guys, but it's going to be harder to acquire talent around them after you pay your guys, basically. If you have all the guys and you have all the draft picks, you're good. you're just kind of good at that point. So, and that's the position they would be in. Okay. Number one, I said the Portland Trail Blazers.
So did I.
Part of this is vibes. To be honest, part of this is vibes. I would love to see Damian Lillard rewarded for not asking for a trade, for years of service in Portland, for every single thing he's gone through with that organization. Damian Lillard, by the way, probably coming off of the best individual season of his career, in my opinion, was unbelievable this season. It was absolutely unbelievable this season playing for a Portland team that was an absolute mess around him. You figure if you get Wembanyama, you probably retain Jeremy Grant at that point. You have Shaedon Sharpe, who I think has enormous upside. We saw some flashes of that later in the season this year. You still have Anfernee Simons, obviously. The thing this team is desperately needed is like a real rim protector, because Jusuf Nurkić ain't it. Victor Wembanyama to Portland would be absolutely incredible. Why do you have them at number one?
For a lot of the same reasons. I think I do hate that it would be kind of a bailout card in some ways for the front office. And it's not this front office's fault. It'd be last front office's to a degree with how they've done things. But I just like saying Dame deserves it that's a bridge too far for me. He's chosen to be there. That's his prerogative. But like, I want to see his career get to extend gracefully and finish out in Portland, especially with how good he was this year. Because I mean, like, again, and well, considering that I did go off vibes a little bit, the idea, like, that team, I really do think the team, if Brandon Roy hadn't gotten hurt, that that team really does damage, becomes something special in the West. Obviously, he has to deal with the progressive knee issues. They draft Dame after LaMarcus becomes who he becomes, who I think LaMarcus, to me, in his prime, was like the perfect number two option. And like, you never quite got to the, like, Dame being at his full heights when LaMarcus was there, because obviously, you know, LaMarcus ends up going to San Antonio and doing what he does in his career there. And I feel like there, I just see the window of, like, with how good Victor is and what he would do for what, like, that fit is. And if they just make a couple tweaks around that, like, I think that's, that could be a top four team in the West next year if things like really hit right.
I
love the idea of that. That would make me happy.
Part of it is also just like a vibes standpoint for me as well, in terms of this organization has been snake bit by injuries throughout its history, right? You know, Bill Walton, you know, they win a title with Bill Walton, but like the reason that ends is because Bill Walton continues to get injured, unfortunately. You look at the Brandon Roy injury, unfortunately. It's another prime example of a guy that was cut down before we really got to see his best. Greg Oden, you know, obviously another example, a guy we brought up earlier, didn't really ever get to see him take off in the NBA at all outside of like a 20 game stretch at one point, I believe in his second or third season. It would be awesome to see Portland in those fans who are amazing get rewarded, I think, in a real way, on top of Dame getting rewarded for, you know, look, I agree with you. Like, I don't know if Dame like deserves it. You're probably right about that. But I also have no problem rewarding a guy for staying loyal.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't mean it like that. You know what I mean? I just meant like, I do think like that somebody in the media would see this and be like, ah, oh, you know, like this is just like retribution for Dame choosing to be here. I'm like, I don't think it's that, you know, it's not, that's like a little too fairy tale bullshit for me. But like, I do think that it would be cool to see him. Like, I would so much rather see him get to stay out in Portland and have things really hit right, because like you mentioned, like, I just think more so, like, I would rather praise somebody for being loyal than shit on somebody for wanting to go somewhere else. Like,
yeah,
I think that it tends to be way too much of the using praising somebody for staying to tear down people who left without accounting for reasons why they left. So that's all I mean. Like, I think, like, I would not love some of those talking point narratives, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, we've done it. So just to run through the rankings, number one, Portland, number two, Oklahoma City, number three, Dallas, number four, Detroit, number five, Houston, number six, Indiana, number seven, San Antonio, number eight, Orlando, number nine, New Orleans, number 10, Utah, number 11, Toronto, number 12, Chicago, number 13, Charlotte, number 14, Washington, about all I've got. Mark, any other strong takes here?
Do I have any other strong takes? I don't think so right now. I'm just excited for this draft to get here. I'm excited for the lottery to get here, and then we can kind of go from there. Because I think that this is just one of them. Like, this is going to be one of those draft classes that we talk about for a long time. Like, at least for me, this feels like the closest that we're getting to, you know, what 2003 was. Like, I don't think it, you know, that's a lot of projection and conjecture. Like, I don't know if it's quite going to go that far, but I also don't think it's impossible. Like, I think that I look at the, at the top half of the lottery, and I'm like, I do legitimately think that there's like seven or eight guys who could really be consistent, but like all-star level performers in this class, if things really hit. And that's like incredibly exciting. So I'm very excited for what this could be.
Yeah, it's a loaded group this year at the top. I'm not quite as high on the depth as I think some people are.
Yeah, no, I agree. Class. I think that there's definitely a fall off once you get past like 12. Like,
there's a fall off after 12, and I think there's even like another fall off after like 22-ish, 21-ish, something like that. I will probably have fewer first round grades than what I normally have in a draft class this year. but I will also probably have, you know, more tier two plus guys than what I normally have in a draft class. So it's really fun and really exciting. Daniel Garrett asks for one thing. Mark, give us a bad food take before we get out of here.
Do I have a bad one? Well, it'll be good to me, bad to you. I don't really like sausage. Not a big pork guy. Not a fan of sausage. It's too greasy and it just, it's uncomfortable. I don't really like hot dogs because it's the same thing. Pretty much anything in a pork casing is bad, except for brats. And even brats aren't really even in casings like that, but brats are awesome. But like, yeah, hot dogs are bad. One of my friends did the 9x9 at the Mets game the other day. So 9 Bud Lights and $9 dogs. And I saw him posting pictures on Instagram all day. I was like, I can't even look at that. So yeah, that's my
take. That is a nightmare. Doing the 9x9. I cannot imagine why someone would do that. Like, what is the goal?
There's no reward. It's just,
like, what do you get?
I don't know why he did it. Well, that I do know. He's a good dude, but he makes some decisions. So it was funny. I could not do that because you do it. It's once an inning. So it's like you do it every inning. And like, it's just a consistent destruction of your body. And I know.
Well, the other problem is like, you can't, like, you have to do it with somebody else who's like willing to like share the ability to go up and like go get the food and like the drinks with you. Cause like, look, I could probably eat like a cold hot dog, like by the ninth inning, if I just got like 9 hot dogs in the beginning. It's not great. Don't get me wrong, but I'm saying like, you know, or like in the fourth inning, if I went up and like got like the last 5 hot dogs, like I could live with that. You can't drink the warm beer though. So you have to continually
I would rather eat a shitty hot dog than drink a Bud Light, to be completely honest. I hate Bud Light. I don't like Bud Light. Most light beers are pretty blah. It just reminds me of college too much.
Oh my God. That is so gross. 9x9. That is something that I have. That's a new thing that I had not heard that people were doing at baseball games.
Yeah. You gotta keep yourself entertained somehow. So
clearly, my goodness. Oh my God. Okay, Mark, any movies? I saw Evil Dead Rise this week, finally.
Ooh, I wanted to see that. What did I see? Let me pull up my Letterboxd because I don't actually remember. Like, I watched the new Yellow Jackets.
I have not caught up yet.
I saw Guardians 3, which was good. I don't think it was, like, as good as some people are making it out to be. But I also have gotten, like, a little bit more sour on Marvel movies than consensus has been.
I think everybody is, to be honest.
It doesn't seem like it sometimes. But no, there's been a lot of good stuff. I'm hoping to catch up on more this weekend. I've been so busy the last week or so, I haven't really been able to watch as much. But I did start watching The Handmaid's Tale, which has been fun. It's been good. Well, fun is probably the wrong word for that. But it's a good series. It's very enjoyable to watch and kind of sit through and get some of that stuff. So yeah.
To Daniel, no, I've not seen The Covenant. That is certainly on my list at some point here coming up. That's Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, by the way. We need to get Guy Ritchie's name involved because apparently that's the title of the movie.
I mean, I'll probably see it, but I'm not like super in on seeing it. It just kind of looks like Guy Ritchie made an American Sniper remake. Like, I mean, you know, yeah. I know it's different, but also this movie, from anything I've seen, anyone I've heard talk about it, it's like just it has none of the Guy Ritchie appeal for me. Like, I like when Guy Ritchie does his zany, weird action comedies. Like, I don't really want to go see some super serious Guy Ritchie movie. That's not why I watch Guy Ritchie movies. So
it's fair enough. It's fair enough. I haven't really been tracking my Letterboxd, unfortunately, is the problem. I need to get back into that.
I didn't follow you on Letterboxd. I don't think I follow you on Letterboxd.
Yeah, it's a lot, typically. I've not seen Guardians yet. I've not seen Beau's Afraid yet.
I need to see Beau's Afraid. I've heard incredible things about it. I feel like I need to see it in theaters before it's out, because that would be – that's definitely the kind of movie I want to, like, not have my phone on or like – be anywhere other than experiencing that. So yeah.
I will say one movie I watched, The Pope's Exorcist. I had a great time.
I heard it was like, it's on my watch list. I heard that Russell Crowe is like surprisingly kind of awesome in it.
He's great.
Yeah.
he's legit. It like makes you understand the power of movie stars.
Yeah.
Cause he is, that movie should be like totally unwatchable, and he is really good at it. And like really fun in it. Look, it's not an amazing movie. It's like a classic, like 3-star Letterboxd movie, but I had a great time. Like I had a really good time. And like Evil Dead Rise, I thought was maybe like 3.5. It was pretty stupid. The last half hour kind of saves it, I think. Yeah.
Were you a big like OG? Did you like all the original Evil Dead movies?
Yeah, I like the first 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like my favorites, but like I like them.
They're enjoyable. Like I personally like, I like horror movies that don't take themselves too seriously. That they go farther than not taking themselves too seriously, but
right.
It's fun. I've actually never seen the like, I think it was like 2010, 2012 remake. Never seen it. I need to do that.
I realized that I never watched it either. Yeah, because Laura was kind of explaining what it is. And
I've heard it's really good. So
yeah,
I need to do that. But yeah, no, I just haven't made the time.
Yeah. All right, folks. Hit the subscribe button over on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button over on your podcasting devices. I have a redraft of the 2022 NBA draft that many people took very, very well and very, very seriously. And, you know, I got no hate in my mentions at all for it. It was great. No, shout out all those people. I love it. Thank you for reading my work. Genuinely, like seriously, that thing is such a mess. And like, you can go a number of different ways. Evaluation is nowhere near a, science. It's certainly an art. So I have no problem with anyone who disagrees with that thing. What else? Next week is lottery week. I will have a mock draft up. I will have a number of different things over the course of that week that we will dive into. I think that's all we've got though. Until next time, Mark, tell the people where they can find your work, obviously.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @MG_Schindler. That's where I'm most active. It's where I have a lot of stuff coming up. Plenty of stuff coming over at Dime and WNBA.com on the WNBA season opening up. I will be all over the place the next couple weeks as I prepare to move down to Atlanta. Awesome. And getting all that handled, which is going to be fun. And just an adventure for sure, which I'm looking forward to. But yeah.
That's great. Mark, I'm very glad that you get to move down to Atlanta. I'm very glad that you get to experience non-home life. That's going to be nice.
No, that'll be cool. It'll be very nice. And Moose is excited too to get somewhere that's warmer. So yeah,
I'm sure that that's true. I don't think Penny, my very small 5-pound Chihuahua Terrier mix, would be able to actually handle any sort of cold weather. So yeah, it's got to be tough for Moose.
Yeah.
Okay. Folks, just go subscribe to The Athletic, do all that fun stuff. Until next time, we'll talk soon.